Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of Tubes and Wires is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I am doing swell. And I say that in terms of my rheumatoid arthritis, which is swelling. I hate it when it gets cold in Minnesota.
You sound different.
I do. I was able to get my new Yeti microphone back working after a series of unwanted updates that Windows just kind of fosters upon itself. I thought, you know what? Maybe I'll give this here microphone one more chance. And I had to get it back from my daughter, Holly, because I was like, here, take it. I don't want it. Mainly because I bought it from, I had it a while ago. And before we aired, we did try. I had bought a new microphone I found on clearance, one of those gaming headsets at Target. And, boy, that apparently just sucked things up pretty bad.
Well, what it was, you found it like this.
Yeah, and
it's got
one of those microphones, not unlike my other one, but I guess I could have bent it closer. But if the Yeti works, I'd rather have it that way, because then if we ever have guests, they can actually sit by me. We won't have to here, hold the headset. Okay, you talk. What did he say? I don't know. Put the headset back. Here, you listen to one ear. I'll listen on the other. So.
Guests?
Yeah, someday we'll find Butch.
I don't think he likes me anymore.
He doesn't like anybody.
I didn't even clean his apartment. It's depressing.
He doesn't have an apartment. Yeah, that's why that was the problem. He has a house.
I didn't clean his house.
He cleans his own house.
Well, we don't know that for sure.
Oh, I do. I've been there when he does it.
I've never been in his house.
There's a reason for that.
I know. I'd start cleaning.
Exactly.
Just like I did your dishes when I visited you.
You did. And Chris said, come back more. Didn't mean she likes you. She just wants you to.
No, she doesn't like me. But I don't have to worry about her saying I don't like you anymore.
No. Just keep cleaning. I'm telling you, we got these million-dollar ideas that we're just pissing away, and that's one of them. Corey's cleaning service. You don't have to like him. Just let him clean.
The cleaner. By the way, I have more cleaner shirts now.
Oh, good.
The joke that never dies. Do any of our jokes ever die?
I don't know.
I was listening to another podcast. I'm such a promiscuous person. But they were talking about how they've been listening to a bunch of new podcasts, and it's, people just recording their Skype calls and telling inside jokes and just recording a conversation. And then I said, hey, you're not the boss of me. And the person messaged back said, no. You guys have information, and you've earned your jokes. If you listen to the show over time, they've built. And it's like, oh, okay. Deathmate.
He's got a puke! He's got a puke!
No.
See, we've earned our jokes, Joe.
Yeah, boy, I can't wait to see you on Friday. I'm going to kiss you right on the lips.
Oh, God.
We're going to do a Franken on you.
You're going to make me write a book?
No, I'm going to wait till you're sleeping and squeeze your boobs.
I don't have any boobs.
Well, then there'll be a quick squeeze.
No, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So it's been a busy week.
It has been. I'm on vacation.
I just got home. I got home at about 2:45. I do not have to be back at work until Monday morning at 7 a.m.
Oh, you got me beat. I don't have to be to work. Well, I got to work one day on the 26th, and then I'm off on another three. I tried to get it to have the 26th off, but apparently the management said, no, that's like a busy flying day.
Really? Why is that?
The day actually we're recording, the 22nd, the day before Thanksgiving, is quite possibly the busiest day of the year because everybody's flying out for the extended weekend if they choose to, and the 26th is naturally the day they fly back. So those 2 days are usually mandatory overtime. But since I had it as vacation, actually it's my normal day off, I suppose they could have, But they have my whole week blocked off. So my week of vacation, Sunday through Saturday, and then I work the one day, the 26th, and then I have my normal days off since I still got three off.
Normal days off?
You have normal days off. You just choose to go sleep overnight. Your normal days off would be Saturday, Sunday, like most people.
Nope, I'm actually, I am considered part-time, and I am supposed to work every other Saturday and Sunday. I work 7 to 10, and then on Saturday, and then Sunday I work 7 to 3. Those are my scheduled hours.
Scheduled.
Yeah. But, yeah, I pick up extra hours. And the good thing is, because I'm not working for the next few days, when we record next, I'm going to have a big old honking list of comics I've read.
Ooh, I might even, too.
So we don't have that list today.
We don't.
No. But I would like to, I it's not a regular segment, but it should be.
It should be.
Are you ready, Joe? Maybe if this happens more often, we'll make it a regular segment. But I would like to introduce a segment called Corey Was Right, God Damn It.
It'll be very, very infrequent, but I'm for that.
2 weeks ago, when Brian Michael Bendis announced he was leaving Marvel, you and I talked.
He is? Why didn't people tell me this shit?
You don't listen to our old episodes, do you?
I did. I listened to episode 4 the other day.
All right. Could you put this on pause and go back and listen to the episode we did about Brian Michael Bendis a couple of weeks ago?
No.
Please?
Just paraphrase.
Just come on.
Summarize.
Okay.
Compartmentalize.
Fine. Brian Michael Bendis left Marvel for DC, and we talked about changes Marvel needs to make, and one of the things I said is Marvel needs to bring in new talent. They need to, much like they did in the early 2000s, go out and start recruiting new talent, bring in new ideas, new faces, and kind of freshen things up. In a surprise move last Friday, Marvel's editor-in-chief Axel Alonso was sent to the wishing well. He was future endeavored.
He was.
He was wished well in his future endeavors, and the new editor-in-chief, who is currently flying back from China, or as our president says, China, C.B. Cebulski, who has been around Marvel for quite a while. Joe, do you know about the C.B. Cebulski?
I do not.
He has been around Marvel for, what, about 15, 16 years, something like that? And he settled in for a while. He was kind of the new talent guy. He was, it's funny how people say that he was kind of second in command after Quesada was moved upstairs. But he was the guy who sought out new talent. If you followed his Twitter feed, he would often give advice for new talent as to what they could do to get their foot in the door at Marvel. He spent a lot of time at conventions, not just here in the U.S., but in South America, in Europe, in Asia, all over the world, looking for new talent. And a couple of years ago, he took on the responsibility of being in charge of Marvel's publishing in China. Because Disney is a worldwide company, and China has over a billion people.
You know, it's good to see that China actually got a job after she left WWE.
Joe?
Yeah?
She's dead now.
Well, it'd be cheaper to hire her, I bet.
And if we were Russell Crap Radio, you know what the joke would have been?
What's that?
Dead? I didn't even know she was sick!
Of course, we don't do that because we don't want the WrestleCrap guys to, you know, send their WrestleCrap mafia after us.
Well, that, and we did give them the crickets back after they wanted them.
Oh, I thought like a spider ate them or something.
No, we wrote them off the show.
Yep.
And I still miss the crickets. Usually when Joe starts talking toward the end of the show, but C.B. Cebulski was actually considered doing very, very well in China. They had created some superheroes for the Chinese market. But he was called back, and I guess it was kind of a surprise to him. He did not know that he was going to be called back. He was just called up and said, hey, can you come back to the U.S.? Oh, I'm coming back to the U.S., blah, blah, blah. And then, no, we want you to be editor-in-chief at Marvel. And then the other thing I cannot find out, no one is talking, is whether Axel Alonso left or was pushed.
I could see either one. He might step back just to be creator, because, I mean, he did a crap load of stuff beforehand.
So well, Axel Alonso's always kind of been an editor. He started as an editor at Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
Then he came over to Marvel and was one of the line editors. And then he was promoted to editor-in-chief when Quesada got kicked up. But with sales not doing so well since the Secret Wars, people have said for quite a while that there's going to be a change afoot. However, I have some bad news for the Twitter trolls, Joe.
What's that?
The fact that they're bringing in C.B. Cebulski, he's a guy who, when he was an editor, pushed a lot of books like Runaways and books that were aimed outside the traditional comic market. You know, diversity.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, it's a bad word. And over in China, he was working on, you know, getting more books for that market. He's also very prominent in bringing in women creators, non-white creators. He wants to bring in people, especially he likes bringing in people from different cultures to work on books related to their culture. So in a lot of ways, to me, this shows that Marvel is kind of looking to grow outside markets.
Which is something they've been rumoredly doing, you know, even though there are no real newsstand comics, they do seem to be pushing graphic novels heavy, especially in, I got who's left, Barnes & Noble. I think they're the only major chain left, but they're definitely on Amazon. You almost can tell. I mean, I go to the little airport bookstores there, and they have graphic novel sections, so they're definitely a presence for graphic novels, and they sell better, too.
Yep. And they also want to get, you know, the Scholastic market. Everybody poo-poos the Scholastic market, but they're one of the, if not the number one bookseller in America. You know, those Scholastic book fairs make a lot of money. And if you ever want to know about that, just ask R.L. Stein, who has worked exclusively for Scholastic since, the 70s? And he will often talk about do you remember the magazine Bananas, Joe?
I love Bananas. And I'm not talking the fruit. I mean, Dynamite and Bananas were like two of the main things to read during the school year.
Bananas was through Scholastic. It was a magazine published by Scholastic. And I just recently read an interview with R.L. Stein, who does the Goosebumps books and everything. But his wife was the editor on that. And he talked about through the 70s and 80s how that magazine made more profit than any other magazine published, and they didn't have a newsstand presence at all. That their subscription base, I think, at their peak was 2 million. And that's not counting the kids who would just buy an issue through the Scholastic book fairs. They had 2 million subscribers. So my feeling on this is that Disney said, well, you know, we're expanding into other markets, and he's doing kind of a good job in China, so let's bring him here. Another thing about him that I've read, it's very rare that creators won't tell stories about one time they got into it with their editor. No one has had any stories like that about him that I've read. Everybody talks about how he's one of these guys who finds the best people, gives them their tools, and stays out of their way. Which,
cool.
I think is always the best way to create stuff. So, Joe, what do you think of Marvel's new pick?
I guess, honestly, I'm pretty indifferent because I guess proof's in the pudding. I want to wait to see what he comes up with. And it is something that probably needed to be done, but there's other things Marvel can do as well. One thing, and I think they're doing, you know, don't have so many frickin' books, you know. I don't know how important it is to their corporate Disney that they are the number one comic publisher, but
it is vital.
Oh, jeez. I'm like, yeah, well, and the other question, maybe you know, how many books do they need to be profitable? Or does it really depend on the line? I mean, we've talked about how Next Wave couldn't be profitable under their terms. But really, you know, what's to keep them from popping up a bunch of reprint lines, especially when something major comes up? You got the Thor movie. Well, you popped up a bunch of Kirby stuff. You pop up a bunch of Thors. You know, next you got Black Panther coming. Pop up a bunch of Black Panther tie-ins. I don't know.
Well, they do that more with the trade paperbacks now. It used to be they would do tie-ins by doing a bunch of comics related to it. But now, if you look at what Marvel's got coming out in the early part of the year, they've got some big Black Panther reprint books. They're putting all the Black Panther stuff that's been printed before back into print. They've got this really nice coffee table book that was in previews this month. And Don McGregor just posted that they asked him to write the introduction for it. And they consulted him about a lot of stuff during his run. But there's a $50 coffee table book that's going to be showing up in bookstores. And then right after the movie, you'll be able to go to your Barnes & Noble and it'll... You know that remainder section? Yeah, you'll be able to get it there for around $10-$12.
Yep, Pretty much.
I shouldn't have said that, should I?
No, but it happens.
I think... there's a lot going on at Marvel right now. There's a lot of big push on this legacy thing. But I think bringing in C.B. Cebulski to kind of go out and find new talent is exactly what they need. And DC, from all rumors, DC is courting the Marvel writers who are now over at Image, like Jonathan Hickman and Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker, and they're really pushing to get those guys to work over at DC, which is another reason why they've pushed back the New Heroes initiative. So we could be looking at some big change at the companies.
As long as it gets to some decent reading books.
I think that's the big thing for me. The new Marvel solicitation stuff dropped yesterday, and I was looking, and it's like, wow, they're really, Mark Waid is writing everything.
Yeah, just like Hickman was writing everything. And before that, Scott Waddell was writing everything. And
but the good thing is Mark Waid's actually been around for a long time.
Well, he's one of the guys I put in the phone book category, i.e. if he wrote it, I would read it.
Yep.
It starts exciting. Help, fire, police, ambulance. It kind of goes downhill after that. Great cast of characters, though.
I'm excited about the Captain America run he's doing. Did you read the first issue?
I don't think I got it yet.
Ooh, it's
maybe
good.
Well, you get your box twice a month, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it's probably coming in the next box.
It's very good. And it's one issue, and it... I'll just give you the bare bones of it. Captain America is traveling across the U.S.
Maybe he'll bond into Superman.
Well, no, he's not walking.
Oh, well, that's... Shit, anybody can drive.
Let's remember that Mark Waid's the guy who made fun of JMS for his Superman is going to walk across America story.
Well, if you don't have to eat or sleep or, you know, find places to do number twos, yeah, you can walk. Normal mortals need to worry about that stuff.
Well, and let's remember that JMS didn't finish the story.
Unless you're Gump.
He lost interest halfway through.
Yeah, well, he got to the boring part of the country.
Sorry, I'm in Iowa. I'm out of here.
Boring.
So, Joe, what do you want Marvel to do with this new editorial and creative shakeup?
That's an interesting question. I guess for me, just... make interesting books. I mean, I'm not one of these, you know, oh, no, Iron Man was a poor little black girl that invented her own armor. I, you know, if the story's interesting, I'll probably gravitate to it. I just, I don't know. I'm not really looking to add new titles, but when I, you know, when, I'm sure when Bendish, his first title show up at DC, I'll be popping those. So I'll be interested to see what they can come up with. It'd be nice to get a new Fantastic Four book back.
Yeah, that'd be nice. One of the things I think would be cool is people are whining that, oh, they're making the comics like the TV shows. So?
Don't bother me none, really.
So, as long as they don't, you know, destroy continuity. As a matter of fact, the new Runaways book actually does go away and fix continuity. Because one of the stupid things they've done with the Runaway characters since their book was canceled is they've been killing them off right and left, thinking that, oh, this will get people interested. Well, now they're fixing that. Which is good, because I always, when they did that, what was the Avengers book where it's they're all trapped on an island and they're doing Battle Royal.
Yeah, I didn't buy it.
I read the first issue and I wrote the creator, the writer, and I said, you know, this is, I understand what you're doing here, but what you're doing, the other thing you're doing is you're destroying a bunch of new characters. And I don't think the payoff's big enough. You know, if you're using a bunch of old characters that haven't been around for a while and you're going to kill them off to kind of introduce new versions, cool. But it's more just, oh, okay, well, yeah, this character's dead, and this character's dead, and this character's dead, and now they can't gain any traction. They've only been around for 5 or 6 years, so, yeah, it's cannon fodder. You don't get that attached. Hopefully they break out of that, we're going to kill someone to make you care!
Yeah, I mean, DC used to do that. They'd make second-generational characters and then kill them at the next crisis.
Yeah! But when you're killing off your characters, you got to remember that, okay, now you can't use that character without, when you bring them back, you've got the crap of they died hanging over their head.
You got better.
Yeah, and even years ago, they finally said, yeah, we're doing this so much that it's, you know, ridiculous. So that's why they did Blackest Night, to kind of, okay, after this, if you die, you die. And Quesada was okay. If you die, you die. And then, not so much.
Well, you know, you got the whole Secret Wars thing where they, that was kind of the Marvel reset. So even if you just want to bring a character back, weren't you dead? I thought I was. You know, don't have to.
Or they come from another Earth and they got dropped on this one.
Well, that was something I always talked about. They had the Phoenix and Silver Surfer from that universe where Korvac won and ended up using the Ultimate Nullifier to destroy everything. And they just took off to another universe. You know, I know they're bringing Jean Grey back. Hopefully she doesn't die this time for the umpteenth time. But that could have been, you know, hey, she just wandered into the universe and all of a sudden you got two Phoenix forces here.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, you could make some decent stories from it, but, and they've certainly done enough time travel and alternate reality travel and things like that. So, you know, I'd like to see a saber-toothed wild child like from Age of Apocalypse. That's something, as I sit there, you know, you talk about, well, what could they do? What characters did they bring back? And most of the characters in DC, you're included, you make these great alternate universe characters, but you can never use them in your real universe. Sometimes you can, like Old Man Logan or Miles Morales Spider-Man, where you just, they remember where they were from, but now they're in a new reality. And their goal isn't to get back to their reality. They're just where they are. In DC, you think of all the Silver Age characters they have that may not work anymore. Space Cabby, I'm looking at you. And you're thinking, could somebody, or Crisp, you know, it's like, could you come up with something that makes these guys work? Or are they just so rooted into their, you know, Silver Age past ridiculousness that they just wouldn't fly with a modern audience? So
one of the things they did, that Karen Berger did when she was at DC, she had this list of characters. And when they would bring in a new creator like Grant Morrison or Alan Moore or Neil Gaiman or whoever, they would give them this list and go, you want any of these? Got any ideas for any of these? And I guess Marvel does that with Warren Ellis, too. They bring him a list of characters and go, who do you want to play with? And I think they need to be doing that more often rather than everybody's pitching a Doctor Strange story. Everybody's pitching a Wolverine story. Everybody's pitching a this or a that. It should be, here are these characters that have been sitting out there for years. Do something with them. And do something new with them. You know, Skull the Slayer. If you read those 8 issues of Skull the Slayer, which I constantly bring up because it was such a fucking mess. But if you read those issues, it's this weird mix. It started with Marv Wolfman's idea of he wanted an apartment building to show up in a weird mystic land that had dinosaurs and magic. And then it became that it's an alternate Earth. And then it became that it's this multi-leveled interdimensional place. And then it became, But how about you go back and look at that and go, okay, let's reimagine it, figure out a new way to do it, and try it again. And maybe this time not change writers every other issue. Will it work? I don't know. Might not.
Yeah,
you keep the copyright, and you give something a chance like Animal Man. Before Animal Man started, no one would have fucking read an Animal Man comic.
You got tons of characters like that that are just sitting around that no one's going to use. I mean, like all the Watchmen characters. Maybe they should bring those back. Never mind.
By the way, DC just sent out a big list of stuff that they are what's the best way to – dumping. They're dumping it on the market. Because both they and Marvel didn't have their best year, they're dumping a bunch of stuff on the market. They're just, okay, get it out of the warehouse, sell
they're
it
taking
off.
Taking a dump. Yep.
You know what I noticed on that list, Joe?
What?
All the Before Watchmen books are on it.
Only you would notice that, because I glanced right past it, and I'm like, you know, I pretty much have everything I want. And the question is, will these books translate into cheaper sales? Are we going to see some guys, your stores mostly, picking these up and having a sale, or are they just going to use them to, like, bolster their shelving and fill in some graphic novels?
Well, if you head on over to cheapgraphicnovels.com, which should fucking buy an ad, it's already they're already showing up there.
So I'll have to double look.
On deep discount.
So there's your hint for today to how to spend your money.
And I imagine when we go down to see Steve Brown, the man of renown, he'll have stacks of that stuff.
He's a stacker.
But, man, the Before Watchmen, blowing it all out. In 10 years, they won't be in print. And Doomsday Clock, they're pushing this thing. I read a review of it that said, this is okay but unnecessary. That it's kind of repeating the same ideas over and over with Trump bashing in it. Well, if it's been done before, why do it again? Then again, you know, sometimes making a sequel to a classic is one of the best things you could do. Like, Joe, that Casablanca TV series, right?
It gave David Soul something to do.
Now, if you're DC looking at this and you've just hired Marvel's architect, what are you thinking?
What are you thinking?
Joe, do you think DC ought to continue in the path they're on, or should they do kind of a course correction to kind of, hey, if Marvel's going to be going international, we should double down on the fanboy market?
Well, I think what they need to do is sit down with Brian Bendis and have what does Marvel call it? Their summit where they get together and say, okay, here's what's happening. Here's
writer summit.
The major crossovers. And try to get their universe to tie together. Because right now, it's just, to me, it just looks like, I don't know, it looks like a mess. I don't, even the mainstream guys, yeah, and I'm talking like the Justice League guys, I don't see any reason to read them. You know, again, I'm on 52 burnout. I feel like the universe has pretty much left me behind. I jump in every so often, but I just as easily jump out. I don't think they should return to the multiverse, even though they have kind of put it there. But you just need to do something and get going. I mean, we look backwards and we look at what Bendis did, mostly with Avengers. And, oh, it was brilliant. Just, you didn't really, I mean, I asked the question, who started this all? It was the Skrulls. They were the ones who started this off. And by the time they got to Secret Invasion, they had gone through, what would they gone through? Civil War. I can't even think of the crossovers.
House of M.
House of M. And Civil War wasn't even written necessarily by Bendis, but he included everything into it. And with that, they tied in the death of Captain America. I mean, I read articles where it was supposed to be maybe part of the end of Civil War, but they thought, no, you know what? Let's just do this as a result of Civil War. And, I mean, by the time you get to Secret Invasion, it was just, it's just amazing how it just all flowed together. It makes me even want to go back and pick up pieces that I skipped, the Dark Avengers, which I never picked up. That's what you need to do. You need to figure out an event, plan it years in advance, and just have it kind of go through. I mean, they kind of sort of did that. I mean, they had, in the beginning of New 52, there was something going on in the background, and as I picked up all of them to read, you kind of got the feeling like there was something going on, and I don't know if that ever panned out or if it just kind of disappeared, or by the time they got to the five-year jump, they just aborted it.
Well, it was the Infinite Crisis that they built up to, because when you had the small shop, remember I gave you a call and said, yeah, I've heard that this the Adam Strange miniseries, you're going to want to buy up on that. Why? It's the start of something. By the way, that was written by Andy Diggle, who's kind of become a big deal. I think one of the things that we forget when you're buying monthly comics, the slow build is the best part of it. The slow build to Secret Wars was amazing. You know, I'm got the big Hickman omnibus, first volume of the Avengers run, but I also read the Secret Warriors, which was Hickman's first story in the Marvel Universe. There are threads in that lead to Secret Wars. His S.H.I.E.L.D. series, which I could not get enough of, and it's still not done, bastards, that had threads in it. His Fantastic Four run, if you've read Secret Wars, you know that's a Fantastic Four story. Yes, the build-up was in the Avengers, but it all played off of what he did in Fantastic Four. That's where all of its, you know, all of the stuff is led up to it.
Infinity Gauntlet was a good one, too, because it started out in Silver Surfer. I can't even talk. Silver Surfer. And Thanos basically got Silver Surfer off the board while he went in some world where he wasn't powered, gathered the Infinity Gems for the first time, and then I remember trying to sell that to people, and it's like, hey, you got to pay attention to the series. Why? Well, Thanos just became the most powerful being in the Marvel Universe. I don't want to buy it. You know, comics were, what, $1.50, and this was a $3 book. And then, of course,
Thanos!
By the time, oh, yeah, and then all those back issues popped up, the Jim Starlin run, Iron Man 55, the entire run there. And then you get to Infinity Gauntlet, and then all of a sudden people want the Infinite Quest or whatever it was, and those ended up being like $20 books all of a sudden.
It's the build that makes it fun if you're reading your comics month to month. The build to Secret Empire, people didn't like that build because they thought, oh, this is the story. No, that's the start of the story. And now Secret Empire is showing up on Marvel Unlimited, so while I read the main book, I didn't read all the tie-ins. Now I'm reading all the tie-ins. A lot of people complain about, oh, there's too many crossovers, there's too much of this, there's too much of that. I'm going to let you know a little secret based on my years of reading comics and retail. If people are excited about a story, there's not enough. When the first Crisis came out, and a lot of creators didn't tie into it, remember how those things shot up in value? Oh, this loser's comic ties into Crisis. It's worth, 20 times the cover price. Infinity Gauntlet, same thing. A lot of people didn't tie into it. The ones that did shot up in price. Civil War, when the first Civil War happened, they had all these crossover miniseries. They all sold through the roof. It's a lot like wrestling in that when wrestling is hot, people can't get enough of it. When it's not hot, that's when you start hearing, there's too much wrestling on TV. Joe, you remember at the height of the Attitude Era, you had Raw, SmackDown, Nitro, ECW,
and Thunder,
and all the local. There was wrestling on every night. And we were like, there's not enough time to watch it all. Because it was exciting. And when DC was building up to Infinite Crisis, we were all, oh, man, this is so cool. I can't wait to read. Oh, this is great. It's when they don't do that build well, like I'm looking at you, Countdown to Final Crisis, that was just, there's too many crossovers. By the way, Joe, have you ever sat down and read all of Countdown?
I actually put that in my dollar bin when I did my massive blot at the MCDA Con a while back.
They didn't sell, did they?
Oh, well, they did, technically. They just went as...
They went to a different dealer.
Yeah. Fine, but better him than me.
They're just going to shuffle around the convention for the next 10 years. Well, we've talked about that, the Marvel and the DC enough. I'm going to get some tales from the shop, people. Because, Joe, you know what is coming up in 2 days?
2 days real time or 2 days?
2 days from when we are recording.
Oh, well, that would be, let's see, carry the three. I'm sorry, you told me there would be no math.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, I told you I would do no math.
Oh, well, I'm not doing that if you don't do it.
Well, what's going on Friday?
We're going to watch some insane Disney stories that they don't want us to see.
No, it's Black Friday.
Hey, all Fridays matter.
Yeah, with Trump president, now it's White Friday. By the way, I know we're not supposed to get political, but I watched the President pardon the turkey yesterday. How in the blue hell did they find him a white turkey to pardon? And why did they choose a white turkey rather than a regular turkey? Were they scared that, it's a brown turkey? He's going to think that it's a Mexican. I don't get it, Joe. I don't get it. No, it's a Black Friday, which is the traditional day of people getting trampled at Walmart for a cheap TV. But you... We're ahead of the curve. That's right. You took over the comic shop in 1992 when Superman died, 25 years ago. And Black Friday was not a big deal.
Superman died?
He got better.
I didn't even know he was sick.
He got better.
That is a fun joke. didn't get better?
Who's that?
The Mini Mickeys.
I don't
they
even
said
know
there
what
were
they
six little Mickey kids. Watch the planes arrive. One poor deer went too near. Then there were five. It's one of those weird Disney books.
That's kind of creepy.
It is. For the day Donald Duck's atomic bomb.
That I've read. Because that's a Karl Barks book, I do believe. Yeah. So they reprinted that in the 80s, and that was some creepy, scary, wrong shit. But no, Black Friday. Now, the first year you had the shop, did you do the infamous day after Thanksgiving sale?
I don't recall. I think we did, but it might not have been as big as an event because we were going pretty high from Superman.
Because you were the first comic shop to do something on Black Friday, and I want you to talk a little about how well that went over.
Well, for me, it went over great. But I don't know. I mean, I heard rumors that other people, oh, my God, how can you be having a sale? Nobody's going to buy comics from us, if anybody, if you're going to discount your comics. And I'm like, so? And then, and then the other people are like, you know, and the other big hot comics, when we had like four stores, it'd be like, hey, you're having a sale. People think we're having a sale. I said, well, that's your problem. Maybe you should have a sale. You know, I mean, back then, of course, there was no social media. Our advertising would be in store. I'd drop an ad in the want ads in the paper. And I did have a mailing list. I think I don't know if I borrowed MCBA's. I know Brent Moore at Comic Archives let me use his. So there wasn't as much advertising, but boy, the effects were pretty good. I mean, we had people coming in. That was probably one of the bigger days of the year, the Black Friday sale. And as it went on, I would always offer it to subscribers on the Wednesday before, but then on Black Friday, I would make sure we were there. We'd do extra hours. We never really did a special event like a signing or anything. But, we got everybody pretty torqued off, which is good because it wasn't the first time we did.
I still remember the people going, he's going to kill the back issue market.
And if you ever listen to Solo Joe, Gruber and I did, because we showed up at that Comic-Con we first did. I think it was 84, 85, I don't remember. And we had comics on whopping 20% off cover price. Those guys are going to kill the market. Who do they think they are? And now you go to a con, and I don't, unless you got the key book or, you know, what was my complaint at the last con? I had books, $1 a piece. The guy across from me was doing 50 cents a piece. And his business was almost nonstop. You know, comics are just, you know, go to a con and everybody goes for the cheap stuff.
Well, it's funny how in the 90s, especially during the boom, if you discounted below a guide, people thought you were insane. Not the people buying them. They were, like, happy to get the discount. But dealers would lose their minds. You're destroying the worth of these comics as if they're stocks. And I don't remember Black Friday being that big a deal until, like, the late 90s. I don't remember it being such a huge thing, you know, when you opened the shop or even when you started doing the sales. But it seemed like afterward, you know, after we got to like 98, 99, you know, you'd get the Thanksgiving Day paper, which would be, you know, the biggest paper of the year with ads, and plan out your trips to the point where Russell Crap Radio now does an annual Black Friday episode about Artie Reynolds going places on Black Friday. And there for a while, I got involved in, you know, going to Black Friday things for, you know, to get the discounts on stuff. But now it's like, oh, it's cheaper on Amazon. Amazon's been running their Black Friday sales since November 1st.
Yeah. Target sent me something, you know, hey, here's our deals coming up. And if you go online, you can get them now. And of course, on Saturday, isn't that Small Business?
Yep, Small Business Saturday.
Yep.
And I think, was it last weekend, like Comic Shop Saturday or something?
Local Comic Book Day, which I didn't see anything online.
Yeah, me either.
Which doesn't mean anything. I mean, Facebook's terrible because they're, any one post you put on Facebook, even if it's like for our podcast, only 10% of our listeners or our followers will actually see that. And we don't have a really big Facebook presence anyways. And if this net neutrality goes away, we probably won't have a presence on internet at all.
No. We're on the iTunes. We're on the Stitcher. We're going to be on the Google soon. We're growing. We are still growing.
We'll probably cut off, you know, unless we pay to be one of the top streamers. Our little podcast is going to be shoveled away.
I won't allow that to happen.
All by myself.
Joe.
I want a pod all by myself.
What? It's not going to happen. You know why?
It's not going to happen.
We are a national treasure.
Well, we'll be sold off to pay off the national debt and give somebody else a tax cut.
Oh, maybe C.B. Cebulski will send us to China. Or as the president says, China.
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 Wow, we are really bashing him. It must be, I must be tired. Oh, wait, yeah. I had a beer.
First one, eh? Always a trip.
First one in over a year, yeah. No, I don't have to work tonight or tomorrow, so I had myself a beer.
Yep.
Joe's always wanted me to do a drunk show, and that's...
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe I'll do one on rum and coke one of these days. I have brandy now, so...
Boy, you better let her go.
Yeah, the sailors say she's a fine girl and what a good wife she would be. But I'm not interested because my life, my love, and my lady is the sea.
I always thought you were in the seaman.
Joe, what did you do at the shop to get ready for Christmas, though?
We stocked up on gift certificates, which became significant because a lot of people would just come in and do gift certificates. And actually, I found that there was a grocery store, it might have been like a small druggist, going out of business. He had one of those old-fashioned things where you put in the gift certificate, which we like bought at Home Depot. I'm sorry. Whatever that, Office Max, one of those type stores. And you just stamp it, and then you draw right in the price and that. I tried to do like a gift registry where like you come in and, you know, tell me the things you want. And then if like your loved one were to come in, I would say, well, here's what he put on the list and do it. But that didn't really go over too well.
Because most loved ones wouldn't come in.
I know I did try on the 24th. The first couple of years I would stay open till 6 and I didn't get anybody coming in till past 4. And then one year I stayed open till 4, and nobody came in and past 2. So I just said, you know what, I'll be open till 3, and then I'll close. I know, especially when Big Mike was there, he always offered to stay open on Christmas because, you know, his family did stuff, I think, Christmas Eve. And he would go to the Rope and Dope, the Country Western Bar in Invergrove Heights that's no longer there. And he didn't start his day till 10, so for him to come hang at the shop, he was like, yeah, no big deal. And he would do that for other holidays, mostly like 4th of July, Memorial Day, Labor Day, and get enough sales to actually make it worthwhile, not only pay his wages, and I always gave him like double time for doing that. I didn't do it, I think, on 4th of July, or I'm sorry, New Year's Day. Thanksgiving and Christmas were probably the only three that I actually closed. And Christmas-wise, you know, we put up some decorations. And when I got the bigger shop, I could actually make some boutiques. Like, hey, here's some good gift ideas, things like that. But the big one was always gift certificates because I didn't really have a lot of people picking up stuff. Occasionally, I'd see a wife come in, you know, especially if New Comic Book Day was like before Christmas and they knew their loved one would not get in time. What I really enjoyed was Brent Moore down at Comic Archives because he went ballistic. I mean, he would tear the ceiling down and put up wrapping paper and gifts and lights and just any major holiday. He was just all over the store doing that. Absolutely loved it. If I ever had another store, I would hire him just to do that to the store. You know, Christmas size it, Halloween size it, Thanksgiving size it. I mean, the guy was just a machine when he did that. And I kind of took some inspiration from it, but it was a little bit bigger because, I mean, my store was probably 3 times the size of his by the time I closed it up. Well, sold it, actually. It just got to the point where I just couldn't do it. It was fun in the original store when it was the smaller one because I had an actual storefront place that I could fill up with a Christmas tree and put gifts under it and put lights around and things like that. But the big store, that kind of went away. I didn't really have – I had windows I could put things in, but I also wanted to leave them open to get natural light in. And then eventually they got covered up because I put some display cases up front and the Coke machines were up front and We had a big TV up front. You still get some posters and things like that in, but you know, you couldn't quite do the Christmas tree as easy as you could before.
And one of the things that I always wondered was, do the high-dollar items, like, you know, the more expensive comics or the statues or things like that, do they sell better during the Christmas season or right after? Or is that sort of a doesn't matter what time of year?
The only things that really sold better were T-shirts. And there were two times of the year that I did T-shirts. Now, I'll preface this a little bit because what got me into the T-shirts was watching Comic Archives. You go down, and Brent had tons of T-shirts in his store. And he would actually drag them off to the Comic-Con where he would have them all set up, and he said he sold a ton of them. And then when he finally closed his store, I kind of did the same thing. I would spend most of the year, most of the time I'd get the previews or the advanced comics from Cap City before that. Cap City actually had a starter pack for T-shirts. For like $50, you'd get X number of T-shirts. All I remember them being about $5 a piece. Put them out on the shelf for like about $10 a piece, and that got people interested. And then I started getting in more shirts. I put them out for $15, and the bigger sizes, you know, the double XLs, those would go for $20. And it got to the point where, and again, I took this from Brent. He said, you spend all year building up your inventory, and then there's two times of the year where they sell and you blow them out. The comic show, the MCBA's big two-day one that they used to do in the fall, and then Christmas time. And sure enough, by the time the shop was going, that was it. I mean, you're dropping money, and of course, you look in previews now, and my head just swims. What would you possibly buy? What sizes do you buy? The kids' sizes sold better than some of the other ones, but not all the time. Do you go for some of the girl ones? Do you, and you know, nowadays you go to Target and you find Avengers, you find X-Men, you find Spider-Man, you find Superman. When I was doing it, you didn't find them anywhere. Maybe Spencer's Gifts. Nowadays you go into Hot Topics and their entire wall is full of media and comic T-shirts. So the market definitely has changed from when we did it. And again, I haven't seen any closeouts again. That's where Cap City and Diamond 2, they used to have that discount list that would come out once a week, and I'd run down any T-shirt, just order it. And that would allow you to get a few in and get them in cheap so people could come and take a look at them. As part of that, you had to buy decent displays. I think I ended up with a round rack.
Yes.
Eventually, which, you know, you've seen them at regular stores. You just find a used furniture place, buy the round rack. And then I ran to probably Snyder's Drugstore, better, I think Walgreens now, and get those cheap, heavy plastic hangers where you get like 5 to 10 for a buck. Wire ones just don't cut it because people
no
flip
more
them and they
wire
look at
hangers.
Them. Oh, this is terrible. And then you just make sure you keep them, not give them away because, yeah, they're only a couple cents a piece, but you know, that adds up, especially if you're trying to buy them. Make sure you have enough hangers for everything. Separate the shirts by sizes is more important than anything. And I think for a while I actually put a few on the wall. Actually, I had a couple wall display things where you could put them up if I was trying to make like a Spider-Man display or whatever. So, but yeah, I still go through previews. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I got my previews right here. And, you know, you get to the back and you look, they have all the apparel. I got to tell you, I have no idea what I would buy. Some days I just mentally go through, like here, my page one, you got, there's a Wonder Woman shirt. There's a Hush T-shirt with Batman and Catwoman. The Doctor art, I'd probably do that. Lord of the Rings, Eye of Sauron looks pretty good, but does anybody really care anymore?
Well, there's a Lord of the Rings news, Joe.
Oh, what's that?
I don't know how deep you are into Tolkien, but his son, Christopher Tolkien, has been kind of in charge of the licensing since the 60s. And that's why, you know, there has not been that much in the way of Tolkien licensing. Matter of fact, he said a few years ago that he was unhappy with the movies that Peter Jackson made.
I'm sure he wasn't displeased with the money.
Yeah, that's what I would always say.
Yeah, you know.
But he has stepped away, and within just a month of him stepping away, Amazon has announced they're doing a Lord of the Rings TV series. And I would not be surprised if we start seeing Lord of the Rings comics, sequels, books, whatever, because with Christopher gone, they say the new person in charge of licensing is much more agreeable.
Well, we had Lord of the Ring toys for a while. They were, I forget who was doing them, but really nice toys. And they phased those out in favor of doing movie toys. And they were different scales, so they didn't really play together very well. So, yeah, there's definitely a market for that.
But the statues did not, it wasn't like people were like, I've saved up all year and now I'm buying a statue.
No, not really.
Okay.
The problem with statues is they ship about 6 months after you order them. So it's like with the T-shirts, you have to get to a critical point where they just kind of go in on their own. We did it early with graphic novels. You always talk how we were one of the first stores to fully embrace graphic novels. And eventually you get it and people start buying them. You see it now with The Source. They have that entire wall above their comics, their entire shelf full of statues out on display. The statues we had, we tended to want behind glass because I didn't want them getting dusty and I didn't want people to, you know, handle them because some of them are quite delicate.
Yeah.
For a while, they had the busts that they were doing, and we sold a crap load of those things. So it's all you get that certain tipping point where people just come to you to look for it. And, of course, we took pre-orders on them. Occasionally you get stiffed with it. I mean, towards the end I would probably, you know, you got to put down half. It's non-refundable. But then after that I probably would not take down deposits unless it was like a $500 bronze or something. A couple guys got into pricing wars. Well, you know, these guys will give me 25% off. Well, then go buy it from those guys. I'm considering the shipping on it. You know, I've been selling you these things for years, and now you're going to play that game. And it got to be a big thing. And towards the end, there was one guy bought a Batman statue, and he stiffed me on it. And he just played the waiting game because he knew I was selling the shop. You know, he kept getting, well, you know, the cover is ripped. Okay, so I called Diamond, and they sent me a new cover, you know, from DC. So I covered it up, and, well, you know, I'll pick it up next week. I said, I'm not going to be here next week. Why don't you just tell me you don't want it? Stop screwing around with me so I don't have to. I could have put it out while I was selling, you know, doing everything on discount. And now it's less of a concern because I could have turned around and popped it on eBay or popped it on Amazon, you know.
Or I haven't brought it to a convention.
Conventions are hit or miss. I mean, Gruber, he's kind of beyond the mix point because he's been selling his stuff off. But you get to the point where, you know, yeah, the statue's $500 on eBay. Well, these guys want to give you $90. Well, you paid $200 for it. So, yeah, you know, if you don't like a statue, you probably shouldn't be buying it to begin with because not very many of them hold their value. But I tell you, I would love to get a hold of that original Sandman I sold Nick years ago. That baby's worth some bucks.
I'd like to have the Batman Dark Knight statue I had that one of the jerks I used to work with broke.
Oh. Was that the one I got for ordering X amount of the hardcover or something?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Screwed me over. They screwed me over because, well, you can't prove. You can't prove she did it. Well, she's been breaking everybody else's personal stuff when she gets mad at them. Yeah, but you can't prove it. Bunch of bastards. You know who's not a bunch of bastards, Joe?
Ajit Pai, the Trump-appointed head of the Federal Communication Commission?
No, he's a jerk.
Oh, okay. Then I have no clue.
These guys, our sponsors.
Oh, it was so obvious.
It was right there.
Right there.
That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject: advertising. Thanks. And after we do the ads, we talk about what's coming up on the old network. The Solitaire Rose Network, we're in the last month of the year. So you're going to get two episodes of Bad Advice with me and Wolfie. You're going to get two episodes of Novelcast with just me. You're going to get one episode of Series in Review with just me. Joe, we need to do another Master of Kung Fu here soon. And are we going to get an episode of the Solo Joe?
No.
Fine. But no, a whole bunch of stuff. And heaven knows how many episodes we're going to get of Scrabbling Across the West with Dave and Stephanie Kofell. They just seem to drop out of the blue, and sometimes there's one every couple of weeks, and sometimes you get two or three a week. So a lot going on here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. And next year, I'm getting back on my regular schedule, so get ready, kids. We'll talk about that with Freaking and Geeking, but get ready. We're going to be filling your ear holes with all sorts of audio goodness.
You lucky guys.
And gals. And
anything else in between. Martians, giraffes.
Pets.
Yep.
Sharks. If sharks want to listen, that's okay, but I'm not a big fan of sharks.
Oh, I love sharks.
They like you, too. They think you're tasty.
Yes.
And after we do that, we ask Joe the most important question of the week. Joe,
yes.
Is the wife going to make you wear pants when you go out for Thanksgiving tonight?
No, because we're going to stay home. Well, she'll probably make me wear pants, but that's a different subject.
Fine. Then what's going on the eBays?
All sorts of stuff. People are going crazy because they want stuff. And by God, I am here to help. For the most part, you just can't make rhyme or reason when something's going to sell. I always talk about the big fun things. Like I had an Overstreet number one comic book price guide replica. We talked about it a few shows back.
I found mine.
Finally sold that. So
how much
that
did
was
it sell for?
Somebody made an offer. I mean, it's got a value of about $50. Some guys have it upwards of $100. Our good buddy at Dreamhaven has an original one, which I saw at the last FallCon, which was kind of cool. Somebody asked $30. I said, sure, sold. So I said, I'm not unreasonable. That make an offer thing is very useful because you never know what something's going to price at. And we'll go. Okay, I had a Spawn 62, two copies of it, which had an Angela appearance in it. As you know, she'll probably never appear in a Spawn comic again. Guess how much they sold for, Corey?
$100.
Nope, $1.90.
Really?
When I tell you they're the cheapest on eBay, I work the cheapest on eBay because I go and I looked, and for some reason I didn't sell these at the purging, you know, when I blew all the boxes out. And I did. I think I mentioned, Corey, do you have a run of Marvel Age?
I probably do in the boxes somewhere.
You want to find number 41, take it out, and protect it. Because for some reason, that bad boy is worth over $200.
And why is that? Do we know?
No freaking clue. The only thing I can think of, it's the first Stan Lee soapbox in a while. And he's got a photo cover on the inside. Fred Hembeck's also got some stuff in there.
Is it issue 42?
Nope, 41.
41, okay.
With Stan, you'll know it because you got Stan Lee's smiling face sitting there on the cover. And I actually had myself a copy. The cheapest one on eBay was going for $150, so I put mine at $125. Someone made a best offer. It's gone. But you on listener land, if you have one, you know now you got some of that ready-to-go Christmas money. Put her on eBay's. I tell you what, give me a call. I'll do it for you. That's the type of guy I am. I've been known to take commissions here and there. So you could just never tell. You think something with Angela in it would be expensive? Nope. With a little comic like Marvel Age 50, I can't, you know, who kept them? It was just a promo magazine. They were 50 cents a pop. So
out
lots
on
of
the,
fun on the eBay's.
Out on the Wikia, it just states that anything special about this issue? Nope. Let's see what this says. It was August 1986. As I grind the show to a halt.
K-R-A-Y-Z. Either go to Corey's website and follow the link or just look me up on the eBay's. Again, if you tell me you're here, a listener of the show, and you do see something you want to buy, make an offer, let me know. I'll probably say yes just as a thank you. Or if you just buy it outright, let me know. I'll do something nice, maybe free shipping. Maybe I'll take something out of the accumulation of crap that's still here and give it to you as a freebie. I haven't done that in a while. I'm aching to give stuff away. New stuff going online, just some stuff that'll probably be up before this podcast drops. I got a bunch more graphic novels. I got some small action figures, a couple from Stranger Things, some of the Big Bang Theory figures that have popped up here and there. I got to make room because, you know, as much as I love selling stuff, I got more stuff coming. And we'll talk about that when we get to geeking.
$475 for that. And all I can find, it's a Stan Lee cover, Stan Lee photo cover.
Yep. Like I said, somebody on eBay's got it for $150. If you're looking, Atomic Avenue? Some guy's offering it for $226. I mere $125. That's the type of giving guy I am.
Give.
Besides, with you and me geeking on Friday, I need some money to play with. So.
Oh, there is that.
There's always a reason. Yeah.
Well, after we listen to Joe talk about the eBay's, we ask the important question. We get to my favorite part of the show.
Everything you always wanted to know about sex, but were afraid to ask?
I love that movie.
We'll talk about that momentarily.
No, it's my favorite part of the show. It's what's on sale at ThinkGeek.com.
Ooh.
Black Friday sale opened already. No. It's freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
ThinkGeek.com. Wait, don't we do freaking first?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not paying attention. I'm a little sore this week. I'm rheumatoid's kicking my butt. It's a little colder than usual, and we've had some high pressure rolling over Minnesota, so that usually flares it up. So I'm at the tail end of it, so I can actually move without, you know, sounding like a rusty door.
Rusty door, is that one of those weird sex things they talk about, like a Cleveland steamer or eggs Danny Thomas style or lemon party? by the way, do not look up Lemon Party on the Google. Just don't do it.
I did look up Two Strokes in a Cup, and you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Well, if I would have had another cup.
I did, you know, I told you I was trying for that TSA job a while back.
Yes.
Well, you know how I talked about I was applied for that job within TSA?
Why, yes, I do.
They sent me an email, said I was not qualified.
Well, we've known that since the show started, but we still have you around.
It's kind of weird because, you know, you spend all that time on the resume and answering these KSA questions, showing that you're qualified, only to be told you're not qualified. Which, you know, and you're questioning, well, what does that mean? Because, you know, they put you on a scale 1 through, and it means one of two things, three things, actually. One, you didn't give them the right answer because they say, how well are you using WordPerfect and Excel? And you go from, I don't know anything about what you're talking about, to, you know, I wrote the damn program.
WordPerfect?
Yeah, exactly. So you go.
People still use WordPerfect?
Somewhere within there, it's like a 5 scale, and you're supposed to grade yourself accurately and then go back and, on your resume, point out to where you back that up. And it's kind of like, to me, it's, you're showing that you're qualified by, yeah, I've worked on these programs. I work on them in my job. So that means that either I didn't hit the right button or the person who read it didn't believe it, or what I pretty much believe is the fact with almost any job like this. They have the chosen one they want in the job. They just have to go through this process in order to get them there.
They are the chosen one.
They are the chosen ones. TSA used to be really bad with that in the beginning. I mean, people would be picked up because, oh, well, your dad happens to play golf with my dad, therefore I'll put you in this cushy job so you don't have to pat down sweaty transvestites. But
not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, matter of fact, some of the sweatiest transvestites I know are my friends. But so I'm not qualified. So that was kind of, it was not surprising, but just a little disappointing because, you know, you were kind of like, well, maybe I'll be able to get out of the job I have to sit for 7 years before I can retire and take on podcasting full time. Oh, well. But other than that, that's pretty much all I'm geeking on. Corey, what are you freaking on, Corey?
Well, Joe, last week, I might have talked about it on the show, last week was the end of open enrollment for two of my three clients. So yes. Last week was insane. Pretty brutal on the phones. I was getting 60 calls a day, which was a lot. I was working 12-hour days. And by the time we got to Friday, it's like, oh, thank goodness. And this other client, who's not that big a deal, we haven't got a lot of calls on him, they close up on Monday and Tuesday of next week. And no more overtime. They had told us there would be no more overtime for this enrollment season. I come in on Monday, and it's much louder than it has been in a long time. And during the open enrollment season, I start at 7 a.m. when the phones open, and normally I start at 8:30. So I come in at 8:30, and not only is everybody on the phone, but there are people there who normally don't answer phones, like supervisory people who are taking calls. And it's like, that's not a good sign. I log in, and the little client that wasn't had that many calls, well, guess what? Everybody waited till the last 2 days to call. By the time I had my computer on, there were like 6 or 7 emails saying, we're looking for people. Well, it started with, we're looking for people who'd like a little overtime. Then it was, we really need people to take overtime. And then it was, there's mandatory overtime. And then the last one, and I think I even messaged you, it's why we didn't record Monday, mandatory overtime until an hour after the phones close, because it looks like people will be waiting in the queue for at least an hour. So when I turn on my computer, normally on a busy day, there's like 2 or 3 people waiting for a call. Nope, there was like 40, 50 people, and some of them had been waiting for a half hour. So it was just calls all day. I took 90 calls on Monday. And by the time I got home, my brain was mush. And, you know, then the next day I had to come in at 7 a.m. because, oh, my God, we're this crazy busy. And it was, I only signed up for a 10-hour day. I was not going to do another 12-hour day, although they kept twisting my arm. But it got so bad Monday that they brought us in dinner. The bad thing was they brought it to us. Here you go. Here's dinner for tonight. Couldn't eat it till 8 o'clock because there was no time between calls to shove any of the food in my pie hole. So I was utterly fried last night when I got home. Just kind of sat there. I think I turned the TV on and just stared at it. Joe, you ever just stared at the TV, not really understanding what you're watching? Eventually, I just put it on the slow TV that's on Netflix so that it's like, oh, I'll just watch a fire burning for a while.
That's I call that nice. Nightly news.
That's nice.
Nice.
The other thing I am freaking on is the it's gone.
He's so freaking it's gone.
It's gone.
It's
so,
gone.
Never mind. I did write up a list, and then I just, you know, when we started recording, I remembered, oh, yeah, I didn't send my list to me. What do I remember? Yeah, work sucks. Did you read any comics, Corey? No, I didn't read any comics. Did you read any comic news? No, I didn't read any comic news. Did anything? No, nothing. So, Joe, what are you geeking on?
Hang on, it's getting dark here. I mean, it's only 4:42, and it's so dark in my room. I can't use natural light. Got to use artificial light. Well, I'm geeking that I'm on vacation, and it's weird because, like I said, I've been hurting the last couple of days. So I don't usually that sucks when that's your days off or that you're hurting. But I'm on vacation, so I don't care. I get to actually stay home for Thanksgiving. I get to actually see my family for Thanksgiving, so that's kind of neat. Next year, I actually got off because we did our vacation bid a year ahead of time. So I got 2 weeks off around not only my vacation, but it also same time as my wedding anniversary. I got Thanksgiving and I got Christmas off. So that pretty much 2018, I've got it all planned out. With that, I've actually done a couple things. We were able to watch some TV. And we were sitting down with my daughter, Holly, and we decided we needed to help her out with her sex education, even though she is 18 and everything. So naturally, we turned to the Woody Allen movie, Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex, But We're Afraid to Ask.
You wanted to know about how Gene Wilder fucks sheep.
Or, you know, what is sodomy? Do aphrodisiacs work? Do some women have trouble reaching orgasms? All this fun stuff. You know, actually, for some reason, we were talking about this movie, about how ridiculous it was, and we said, do you want to watch it? And she kind of, you know, in her half-assed teenage way, yeah, I suppose. So, and we couldn't find it, but we got Roku. So the nice thing about Roku, you plug it in, and eventually we found channels we could buy it on, or we found one channel, and I don't know the name of it. I'll have it for the next podcast. It was a new channel that Roku was really pushing, because like when you're on your screensaver, they were pushing, you know, download this one for free and you get free TV. Of course, what they didn't tell you is they randomly throw in ads that you can't fast forward over.
Yes, that's what a lot of the free channels on the Roku do.
You can mute them, though, so that's just as good. The thing that was weird is that they didn't come – the thing about this movie, and it was a 1972 comedy directed by Woody Allen, tons of people in it that you've heard about. I mean, Woody Allen, John Carradine.
Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder was there. Burt Reynolds was there. Tony Randall. Anthony Quayle. You know, just different people. It's one of those movies you watch, and it's half the fun is going, hey, Dr. Shrinker is there. Cool. And so we just kind of watched that. And the thing was, is it's seven different skits, but the ads just drop. I think the ads just drop at a certain time.
Yes.
Because it'd be like at the end of one, they just boom, and then they'd come back, and it's a fade out from that, which just stops. So annoying, but the point was it was free, which is probably all the movie's worth nowadays. So we watched that. We decided to double down and watch Garfunkel and Oates Trying to Be Special on Netflix. And Garfunkel and Oates, of course, is the comedy team. Ricky Lindholm, Kate
McCucci. I love them so much.
Oh, I mean, you gotta love it when they're singing songs about their vagina. They're singing songs about how anal sex is God's loophole to
yeah.
keeping your virginity. So this is a TVMA show. I think everything you wanted to know was maybe PG. Or was it R? It might have been R. Just
it was R when it came out.
Yeah, and there were some Effenheimers dropped, I think. But definitely in the Garfunkel notes. It was hilarious. And Holly decided to one-up us by making us watch a couple episodes of Big Mouth, which is a Netflix original show, which is an animated show where teenage friends find their lives upended by wonders and horrors of puberty. And, of course, they have those things as the hormone monster and the hormone female monster. And the second episode, the female teenager ends up, her mom makes her wear white shorts, and on a field trip she gets her first period while they're going to the Statue of Liberty. And yeah, this is Netflix. This is MEA. So we went from real. It's real funny just watching the juxtaposition between what was edgy and racy in '72 and then nowadays. So. And the most embarrassing thing was when we had to stop and have Holly explain shit to us. We did watch one other movie. We watched What's Up, Doc, which I've raved about before. It's just another 72 comedy with Ryan O'Neal, Barbara Streisand. Just the guy who did it, and my Wikipedia page disappeared, but the director was a fan of screwball comedies from the 40s and 50s.
Yes,
and that's
Peter
exactly
Bogdanovich.
Thank you. And that's exactly what he made. What's Up, Doc is just hilarious. I remember the first time I watched it back in high school. We go over to my friend's house, and their folks had an RCA movie player, which was essentially a record player for movies. It wasn't a laser disc, and it was VHS era. So you'd actually inject these things into the player. A needle would come down, and it would play it just like a record, and it was all protected, so ideally you didn't have to worry about dust. Technology that didn't really last too long, but it was fun to watch, and years later I was able to dig up. I know I've got a DVD of it somewhere downstairs. We just caught it, I think, it might have been Netflix, or we did watch the DVD. We did dig it up, and I remember years ago when my oldest daughter, Dana, was going through her goth phase. Any teenage parents out there understand it. Everything gets dark. Everything gets moody. You worry about the music. And Chris was a little concerned, and I said, okay, well, hang on. I'll have Dana watch this movie. I had Holly watch it later, too. But if she laughs, she's fine. And, of course, there's this scene, you know, being that my grandparents, my father-in-law, my father were firefighters. There's a scene where firefighters have to rush down this hallway, and of course you're looking at the view from your one end of the hall. Elevator opens, they come rushing out. First guy runs to the door with his axe, bam, bam, no, down here. And they start running down the hall. The elevator closes on the hose, and whoa, they all fall backwards. And Dana laughed herself silly, and I just told Chris, don't worry about her, she's fine. And that was just one of the better games. So again, I definitely recommend Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex. Garfunkel and his Oath was hilarious. I enjoyed Big Mouth. Chris laughed at it, but she never wants to watch that again. And, of course, What's Up, Doc is a lot of fun. Reading-wise, I didn't actually read a lot. I only had 3 days at work before I got off. So we recorded our podcast, and then it was kind of nice because I had, 3 days off. I work 3 days, and then on vacation, I'll work one more day and have 3 days. So I got a lot of time off. So I'll get over the fact TSA doesn't want me. But I did pick up a cheap copy of The Devil's Panties by Jeannie Breeden. I've raved about books of this before. It's a daily web strip, so you can go online. I catch it on Facebook, but you can check it right from her website. She's got, I think, 20 volumes out. That's how long she's been doing this one. This one was fun because it was the one where her beau proposed to her. And so it was kind of fun. After you're done reading, she has pictures in the back so you can kind of compare it to what's going on. The only thing she doesn't do is she does blot out some of the faces of the people in pictures because she probably doesn't have the rights to or doesn't want to. Is doing it maybe for a friend's reason. Shows some of the penciling she's done. And then she has annotations, you know, talking about things. Because this is an idealized part of her life. Some of it's true events. And I'm sure she has people that confuse the fictional her with the real her. So just a fun book. I've got three of these so far. The first one I bought back in my shop, I think volume two and four I got online. Now I've got four of the 20. The other one I'm reading, Will Eisner's Life in Pictures, Autographical Stories. This is one of the big hardcovers. I guess there's three of them that cover different things that Will Eisner's done. This one, let's see, was a story, trying to find the table of contents. I read The Dreamer, which talks a lot about his upbringing. By the way, he was kind of more of a pioneer. You know, back then, the comics were just starting to become a publishing thing. The pulps were kind of fading, and so a lot of... And Eisner did this at a really young age. I had no idea how young he was, but he started setting up shops where he'd get a bunch of people to crank out as much stuff as they can, hired people, names that you'd recognize. In the account he did in The Dreamer, he... did a lot of, I don't know what you call them, pseudo names.
Yeah.
And obviously the one that I recognized was the one he used for Jack Kirby. And I'm trying to find it, but... And then at the end, there's annotations where you can go back and talk about the real person that was there, what was real, what was idolized... Oh, Jack King, that's what he called him. Yeah, I wonder who that was. And so it was kind of neat not only to read this fictional account of things that happened to him, but also so, you know, a lot of the details are lost in time because of the age. It happened so long ago. But this was kind of a fun story about just what the early comic years were like. And that was the first of three. I still got two more to read in here, so we'll probably come back. The Dreamer, of course, was published in 86, and, you know, I've got it in this big hardcover, and of course, there's two other ones. I'll have to go dig those up. So, just fun stuff. You owe it to yourself to pick up stuff. I got a copy of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Coulson's Protocols, and I believe this is the, is this the first series or the second series that came out before Secret Wars?
I'm not sure.
I'd have to look.
Have not read those yet.
It's fun reading. I think this might be the second one because Deathlok's in it. I don't think he was in. There were two series. Actually, this was the second one because I remember reading the first issue and then not buying anymore. And it doesn't matter because I think it was canceled. But this is a fun little series. It's good to read. I'm enjoying it. I'm halfway through it. And it's one that I recommend. This collects... See, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. 1 through 6, materials from All New, All Different, point 1, number 1. So, there you go. That's pretty much everything I've been geeking on. Corey, what you geeking on?
First thing I am geeking on is I read a thing online from Jim Starlin where he talked about bringing Thanos to the Marvel Universe. And he also talked about how, well, Steve Gerber and I were doing Iron Man, and Stan Lee hated it so much we were kicked off the book. And I, in my head, went, Steve Gerber did Iron Man? I read Iron Man Annual 3, but I didn't know he did any other Iron Man stuff. So I immediately went to the Marvel Unlimited. Oh, yeah, there he is. There's the three issues right after the Blood Brothers story. And I read them, and I don't know why he was kicked off, but it's not good. Not everything Steve Gerber did was good. He did not really get a grasp of Iron Man, and his Iron Man sounded like generic comic book hero. So one of the things as I read it is it's like, wow, they really needed Bob Layton and Bob and David Michelinie to come on and give Iron Man a personality, because he didn't have a personality. I left work today at 2.
Ooh, what fun.
Because it was so slow, they said, well, if people want to have an early out, you can take an early out. And I still have enough time off that
and
I can...
If you can imagine, you know, when the coyote would run through the door and you see the outline, that was pretty much the outline of Corey. Woo-hoo!
Well, the other thing was, the people who give the early outs, they're not the same people as the supervisors. So I'm getting up to leave, and the supervisor says, where are you going? I said, well, I got an early out. I'm done at 2. Really? Yeah, they approved that. And she, well, I need to check on that. Joe, do you know what it used to, it's not like this anymore, but back in the 80s and early 90s, what used to happen on Thanksgiving Eve?
You would drink beer.
No.
Oh, well, I drank a lot of beer back then, so I don't remember.
What was the pay-per-view that always ran the night before Thanksgiving?
Oh, the Oral History of Image Comics.
No.
No? Oh. 80s weren't good to me.
The Survivor Series!
Oh, yeah. How could I forget?
So Survivor Series was over the weekend, but I do not work tonight. And Sunday I was busy trying to slam this podcast together, and I wasn't able to complete it because I was just so tired that around 5:30 I said, I need to lay down and rest for a bit. And then I woke up at 4 in the morning. So tonight is Survivor Series in the Solitaire Rose compound. So we got Survivor Series we're looking forward to. I still haven't watched War Games, which I hear was phenomenal. And I have myself a big old stack of funny books to read. I have not read anything from Box Day. So over the next 4 days, I'm going to be reading a bunch of comics, watching some TV. I'm like 3 weeks behind on The Walking Dead. I haven't watched the last 4 episodes of the Star Trek Discovery. I haven't watched any of The Inhumans. I haven't watched any of The Gifted. So it's probably good you're getting me out, because otherwise I would just, you know, to kind of merge with the couch. And the last thing I am geeking on, this last couple months has just been insanely busy, but going into December, my schedule's going to become semi-normal, which is why I'm going to be able to record more of the solo podcasts and stuff. But also, I will be returning to the gym. And while people may say, who cares? Don't talk about going to the gym. For me, I love going to the gym. I adore it. It is one of the few times when I can kind of turn my mind off and just relax and lift weights and get on the exercise machine and watch TV on my
tablet. And work off that pie you've been eating.
Damn right. So I am really excited about the fact that I'm going to have time to go become kind of a gym rat again. I haven't really been a gym rat for about 2 or 3 years. Matter of fact, I could probably tell you
the
exact...
Bastard.
Yeah, just a rat bastard. I can probably tell you it was September 1st of 2015 that I was, my life became too busy for me to be a gym rat, and I'm about to become a gym rat again. So, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on for an hour and a half about Black Friday at comic shops and Marvel's new editor-in-chief and all sorts of things. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Oh, hang on a second. Here we go. Nice, shiny new dime. Corey.
Oh, I'm ready. You owe me one dime already.
Who, where, let's see. Tell me, what is considered the first comic book store in the United States? The owner passed away in 2014.
So it wasn't Phil Suling's store.
I think he was considered the distributor.
Yeah, he was. His shop, he wanted to get the books directly from Marvel.
Was in San Francisco?
I don't know.
It was owned by Gary Arlington.
I don't know the name of that shop.
Yeah. San Francisco Comic Book Company. It was in the Mission District, and it's largely considered the first actual comic book store. Closed in 2002.
And didn't they also publish some early undergrounds?
Yes, that was one of the big things because he was there during the underground movement. Gary was also an artist, and he did a Last Gasp collection, or I guess Last Gasp did a collection of his work called I Am Not of This Planet. And he passed away in 2014 from complications of diabetes and heart disease. So there you go. There's your trivia for today. And this nice shiny new dime will go back in the bank until next week. Hit my music.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll. Hey, yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
We done, bitches!